Plan now to attend a firm's March 17th luncheon to hear a provocative and compelling talk on the state of cybercrime worldwide. Hear from a firm's special speaker from the FBI as he walks through the global world of crime online. That's March 17th at noon at the George Washington University Marvin Center in Washington, D.C. Register today at www.affirm.org. That's www.affirm.org.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
Tony Scardino, a chief financial officer at the Patent and Trademark Office.
CRs are debilitating.
Your way to a healthier lifestyle, and I don't know of a better system than the
appropriation. Usually, you get a budget increase or you get a budget decrease. How are you going to manage that over the next X amount of months to get you to the end of the fiscal year? Well, that's really challenging. Think of your procurement staff, all the contracts you have to continually reaward for shorter periods.
Hear the entire interview online. FederalNewsRadio.com/Federal Drive.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning. Welcome to For Your Benefit. My name is Tammy Flanagan, and I will be your host today as Bob Lyons, as you probably know if you listen to the show regularly, is off doing taxes. It's that time of the year again, and it's a very busy time for him. So we're happy to be here with you today on this cold Monday morning in March. And I guess this is the true March coming in like a lion, and hopefully we'll go out like a lamb soon. But we're here to talk today about some things you can do in your time that you have after retirement. It's always nice to think about life after retirement and what that might look like. And for some people, it could include a second career. Some people, it might be all about the grandchildren. But I know a lot of people like to travel. And so today we're going to be talking about moving around and traveling in retirement and a way to do it in a way that you can learn something at the same time and get to see not only the country, but possibly even the world. So to help us understand what we're talking about, we've got two special guests today. The first one is Brian DeLeo, and he's here with the company you might know is called Elder Hostel, but he's going to also tell us a little bit about how Elder Hostel has evolved into a new program that's known by Rhodes Scholar. So we're going to talk about that history and also about some of the things that Elder Hostel is doing today. And Brian has been here, been with the company since 2003. Is that right, Brian? 2003?
Yes.
And so he's going to have a lot to share with us about what he does with the program, and he's the director of the international programs. This was promoted to associate vice president of the company in 2004, and he's now here in Washington area to become the regional director in the DC area. But he'll be happy to answer your questions about any program of Elder Hostel and how it works and how you can become part of it. So if you'd like to join in the discussion today, you can call us. Our call-in number today is area code 202-465-3080. So if you want to call in and talk about Elder Hostel, it's 202-465-3080. Now, our second guest today is Zora Camp. And Zora and I are actually cousins, but I knew she would be the perfect guest today because Zora is an avid Elder Hosteler, I guess I might want to call it. And she's taken 16 trips with this company, so she can share some of her real life experiences and what it was like to travel with this group. So good morning, Zora.
Good morning, Tammy. Nice to see you again.
Good to have you, Zora. And Brian, welcome to the show. We're so happy you could come back and visit with us and share some information.
Thank you, Tammy. Nice to be here.
Very good. Well, let's go ahead and get started and talk a little bit about how Elder Hostel become Rhodes Scholar and a little history about the company, just so we get a perspective of what we're talking about.
It's maybe helpful to understand how the organization began. We were the vision of a man named Marty Knowlton, who was, for those who remember the 1970s, what a kind of person we called a world traveler in those days. And he spent about 4 years walking around Europe, staying in youth hostels in Europe. And some of them were in Scandinavia, where he attended folk schools. And at the folk schools in Scandinavia, he saw older people teaching crafts and history to younger people. And he came back to the United States in 1975 and talked with his friend David Bianco, who was at the time director of residential life at the University of New Hampshire. David Bianco had dormitories that were empty in the summer, and Marty Knowlton thought older people in America should have a chance to learn and discover the way older people in Europe do. And they hatched the idea of putting older people in dormitories in the summer of 1975 at the University of New Hampshire and four other schools in New England. We had 220 pioneers. And in fact, in America, this kind of thing did not exist at the time, and it was an idea whose time had come. It caught on like fireworks. Mm-hmm. And within 5 years, Elder Hostel had 20,000 participants in all 50 states.
Wow, it was something that was really needed, and people wanted to have it. So I was talking to you before the show, I said it caught on like Facebook. It was just like overnight success, and something that catches on that fast must be something that we really wanted to have, and there was a real need for it. So
it's hard to remember that we really didn't have that type of opportunity in those days.
No, I guess back in those days, you just got in the station wagon and filled up the gas tank and went and saw what you could see.
Mm-hmm.
So now it was a matter of being able to learn something and see something. And I think when we retire from our working careers, it's not a time we want to stop learning. So in fact, it might be a time we want to start learning something new.
It's really true.
Yeah. And Zora, where were some of the first trips that you took with Elder Hostel?
I learned about Elder Hostel from the school secretary where my son went to junior high. She and her husband have been avid Elder Hostlers, and they have been all over the United States. They went to Australia and to Alaska. And when I heard about that, I couldn't wait to retire just to be able to get out.
Your son in junior high, he's not too much younger than I am, so therefore
pioneers, yes, in this, and just talked very positively about it. My very first trip was to St. Andrews by the Sea in New Brunswick, Canada. I've always been curious about the Bay of Fundy. I never believed that the tides went up and down 30 feet. I mean, I'm the daughter of a doubting Thomas. And so I had to go see for myself, and off I went. And by golly, the tide does go up and down 30 feet. And when the tide was out, they took us for a walk along the bottom of the water.
Mm-hmm.
It was, what an introduction.
Wow.
To outdoor adventuring, learning, in a safe environment. You met new people. There was no competition. You just enjoyed the lectures, the trips, the food, and meeting new people. It was a wonderful introduction, and I can't say enough good things about it.
Brian, how are the trips organized for Elder Hostel? Is it something that you have to do any of it on your own, or once you've signed up, is it
We have an 800 or an 877 toll-free number to our customer service center. We send out catalogs four times a year, a North America catalog, an international catalog, and a catalog that we call Adventures Afloat, which is ship-based programs. And we have a website. Once you've registered, you call the 877 number, register for the program, and then you just have to get to the first site. And then Elder Hostel programs include most of your meals, your accommodations, all travel, all lectures and learning experiences, gratuities. So it's really a package once you've made your registration.
Once you've made your registration, are there choices amongst which classes you can take, or is it a set program that everybody participates in?
The choice is really before you register, mm-hmm, because we have thousands of programs going on even now in the United States and overseas. And the Elder Hostel catalog is really based on college catalogs.
Mm-hmm.
So you can flip, it's many, many, many pages for those who haven't seen it. It's a newsprint, and some people just put it on the coffee table and dream through as they read through.
Start highlighting places that they might want to visit and go to. Are they based in regional areas? Like here, we're in the Washington, D.C. region, so you would join a trip that originates from here. But are you in all major cities around the country?
We are in all 50 states. We're in all major cities, and we're in a lot of smaller communities. And we have wonderful national park-based programs. So one of the ways to start thinking about this is, where do you want to go? And the catalogs are arranged geographically by state.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say, oh, I think I want to get away in February and turn to Florida or Texas or California and look for a program there.
Now, I know the name has changed from Elder Hostel. You still go by the name Elder Hostel, but the program itself we call now Rhodes Scholar.
Rhodes Scholar.
When did that change take place?
Well, over the years, since 1975, the programs have changed, the accommodations have changed, really. So 99.5% of our programs no longer stay in hostels or dormitories of any sort. And they stay in hotels and bed and breakfasts and inns and have private facilities. Also, I think we as a people have changed. So we're on the radio. I'm 65. But I prefer not to think of myself as elder.
That's right.
And a lot of people in my age range would just as soon, or not yet. Mm-hmm. And so the name Elder Hostel, we began to feel, did not most accurately convey what we do, which is travel and learn. Mm-hmm. And so about a year ago, we changed the name of our programs from Elder Hostel to Rhodes Scholar. People who have traveled with us a lot and who like the name Elder Hostel and trust it, that's fine.
Can still use it.
But for people who've never traveled with us, we think the name Rhodes Scholar accurately portrays what we do.
We're not talking about road like the roads in England, but we're talking about roads like the roads we drive on.
R-O-A-D.
I'm glad you asked that, Tammy. Depicts the learning part of it.
Right.
When you choose the hotels that you're going to stay in, are they places that you've stayed before, so you know what you're getting into, so it's not a surprise when you get there?
We tend to use the same hotels mm-hmm. over and over as long as we can maintain good value rates, because value is an important component of what we do. And before any hotel is used, of course, we go and
make sure it's clean and make sure it treats the people, the guests, well as they come in.
Yes.
Are the accommodations, can you choose to stay in your own private room, or do they pair you up with somebody, or can you travel with friends?
All of the above. Mm-hmm. All programs have prices for one person sharing and for a person traveling by himself or herself. And if you want to share and get the better price for share and you don't have a friend to go with at that particular time, we'll find someone for you to share a room with. And if by any chance we don't find someone to share, you'll still pay the price for double occupancy.
Because you were willing to share.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Huh. So I know when you've traveled, Zora, because your husband didn't always go with you, right? He wasn't the same Rhodes Scholar as you were.
No, he had done a lot of traveling before.
Right.
No, so he went on some of them. But one thing that we didn't get to do, and that was to participate in intergenerational programs. We didn't have grandchildren, mm-hmm. But I'd like to hear more about that. I think that would be a nice thing for people to do, to be able to have fun and learn with their grandchildren.
These are among our most popular programs, and programs. There are a few other organizations that offer intergenerational programs, but it's one of our specialties. And these are programs for grandparents and grandchildren. And for each program, we specify the particular age range because, with grandchildren from 7 to 12 or from 7 to 13 or 6 to 8. And I'll use the example, one that I do. I mean, I'm based in Washington, but I'm also responsible for sub-programs in Baltimore. And we do an intergenerational baseball program in Baltimore for grandparents and grandchildren.
That'd be fun.
And it's we go to a couple of Orioles games. We take a behind-the-scenes tour at Camden Yards in Baltimore. We go out and see their AA farm team, the Bowie Bay Sox. And we last year when we did this, we were able to go into the dugout before the game started. We go to Fort McHenry in Baltimore. In fact, we bring people into Washington for one night so that the kids can see the monuments lit up at night. It's a great experience. And in fact, it's a great experience for the grandparents as well as for the grandchildren to share this baseball together.
Take some of the fear out of spending time with your grandchildren, because I think as much as you love your grandchildren, there's a big age difference and you're afraid you might not pick things they like to do, but this sounds fantastic.
Well, there are other kids on the trip, and mm-hmm. there's a group leader who's the group leader for our program in Baltimore. He wears his Detroit Tigers uniform the whole
So he gets into it.
Yeah, so there's somebody to look after the kids to a reasonable degree as well.
What about people who might want to join this group, not so much as a guest, but maybe do you also hire people to do some of the touring? Like people maybe who have traveled with you many times might want to become one of the tour leaders?
Every Rhodes Scholar program has a group leader who is compensated, who is a professional, who leads the group and takes care of all of the logistical arrangements as the program progresses. I'm always looking for new group leaders in Washington, and I'm responsible for programs in this area. And if anyone thinks that this sounds interesting, give me a call. It's 202-393-2370.
Give us that number one more time.
202-393-2370, and that's the number for the Rhodes Scholar office here in Washington. For the larger groups, I take on a second staff person, and we call this person a host volunteer. And that person is not compensated, but he or she counts when people get on the bus, comes, brings up the rear.
Make sure. If they need a second hand, they're there to lend a hand.
Exactly. But that person is not compensated, but gets all of the program activities and meals, so that it's essentially a Rhodes Scholar program at no cost.
Mm-hmm. So I know, because with the seminars that we do for pre-retirement planning, a lot of people wonder about second careers and something fun to do, something different, because we find people who spend their second careers doing all kinds of interesting things. That sounded like something maybe somebody might be interested in pursuing that end of it.
I have to say that the majority of my group leaders and host volunteers are retired government workers and or foreign service officers.
How did I know that? I figured it sounded like a perfect matchup.
In Washington, we have a great pool.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of federal employees, well, in certain agencies, do some traveling themselves, so it's something they want to continue to pursue once they leave. In fact, I have a friend of mine. She's got 37 years in federal service. And she could easily afford to retire, but her job with the State Department takes her overseas and takes her all different parts of the world, so she hates to retire and give up that chance to travel. So I think this might be a way for her to convince herself maybe to retire and have some fun, mm-hmm. not necessarily just have to teach when she travels.
One of the things that people might do when they're considering coming along with Rhodes Scholars are, what parts of the country would you like to go and visit, and you aren't haven't been able to do it on your own? And if you figure you'd like to go see some of the parks or some of the things, say, in California, take a look at what's listed there, and they vary through the whole year as to what programs are offered. And it is a wonderful way to get there. You need to get yourself to the site, but then after that, you are completely taken care of. And for a single woman, it's a wonderful way to travel, because you are safe, you're secure, and you have a good time.
Plus, there's something to do once you get there. Because I know we've gone on vacations, and for instance, you go to the Grand Canyon. Okay, we're here. Now what do we do? And it's like, you know, you've seen it and you've done that. But this actually incorporates some programs that you take a little deeper into it, that you can learn something and feel more connected to the location that you're visiting.
So that's true. And it doesn't always feel like you're being lectured. The mm-hmm. only time that we had lectures that I can remember was I took one of the adventures afloat, and it was from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, down to New Orleans on the American Queen, the paddle boat. And that was wonderful. But we did have to get off the deck and come into a classroom every so often, just so things could be explained to us about the cities. And like, we were going to stop at Vicksburg to visit the battlefield. So we got a little bit of prep on that.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of the time, it's hard to explain the pleasure that you get and the freedom that you have to let your mind just go and absorb these things. And you learn from your fellow travelers, too. You get hints as to other places you might want to go. You learn tricks about how to travel, how to pack. If you're not quite sure what to do, just have your eyes and your ears open, and people will share with you. It's very friendly.
Wow.
It's an opportunity to make new friends, and new friends who share your interests.
Yes.
A few years ago, I was at a conference in Boston, and I was talking to an avid Rhodes Scholar traveler in his then elder hostel traveler in his 70s, and he said, I met my wife on an elder hostel program at the Peabody Institute in Baltimore. And I think many of the listeners know Peabody Institute is a great music school.
Wow.
And he was very interested in classical music. And he said, of course, I was married to someone else at the time. And it was all true.
Must have been the wrong person.
but the previous wife was not interested in classical music, mm-hmm. and he found someone else.
Wow. Well, that's another interesting thing, that women outnumber men frequently on elder hostel trips, and so men are at a premium. So, guys, you're looking to enjoy yourself and be the object of
a lot of attention,
desire and attention, this is the way to go.
It's true.
Now, the age range with elder hostel, I think, is another reason why you may have changed the name, is that it's not necessarily elderly, as we said. And what is that today anyway? Because as they say, 70 is the new 50.
Yeah.
And even then, who knows? I'm taking my 88-year-old uncle on a trip to Vegas. So
yes.
he's still game for travel. So
for many years, mm-hmm. one had to be 55, or one was supposed to be 55 to take an elder hostel program. And some people waited, actually, because they knew of the organization and they wanted to travel with us, and they waited 53, 54, 55. When we changed the name to Rhodes Scholar, we did away with the age restriction. It doesn't mean that we get really young people on programs, but we do now get people. I have a program going on in Washington, D.C. today, and we have a lady who's 50, mm-hmm. along with some people in their 60s. So still get mature travelers.
You can take vacation from your job to travel, too. You don't necessarily have to be retired to enjoy a trip such as this.
We do have a lot of people who are still working who travel with us.
Now, some of the trips are just one-day adventures, and you go all the way up to what length of trip?
They range from one day to almost a month in Australia.
Wow.
Because if you're going to go that far,
you might as well
see a lot of it. A typical program in North America would be between 4 and 7 days.
It's perfect. Yeah, it's just enough time to get to see some things, but by the time you're ready to come home, it's time to turn around and travel
back. I'm
not
familiar with the one-day trips. Well, what are they?
We have programs that we call Days of Discovery, and they're simply one day, and they are offered to people in particular local areas, usually marketed by email or sometimes by a little flyer.
So they're not wouldn't be in the main catalog.
They are not in the main catalog. That's correct.
So if you live in the D.C. area, what would be a typical one-day trip?
A recent one that we did here in Washington was 3 embassies. Oh. And we went to the embassies of Trinidad and Tobago, Uzbekistan, and Indonesia. And they're all along Massachusetts Avenue, not too far from DuPont Circle. And we were welcomed and informed at all of those 3 embassies. It was a great day.
So it would be a type of trip that just on your own, you probably wouldn't get to do.
You could not. You wouldn't access, be welcome in, right. on your own if you walked into the embassies.
The That's days right. of open embassies are long gone.
Yeah, you remember
those? It used to be like the first Saturday in May.
Right.
But this is wonderful.
That still exists, by the way. That's not our program, but there's something called Passport DC. When in May, non-European embassies, most of them are open, and a separate weekend there is something called the European Union Day, when European Union embassies are mostly open. In fact, on those particular days, they're easier to get into than they used to be.
What was the name of that again? Did you say?
It's called Passport DC, and it's run by Cultural Tourism DC, which is a wonderful organization here in Washington. And then originally, Passport DC included European embassies, and the European embassies got together and they said, we want a separate day, we want to do it ourselves. And so it's usually one weekend later that the European embassies are open. But you can go to the website for Cultural Tourism DC and go through on Passport DC, and you'll get all of this information. It's in May.
Wow, that's good to know, too, because I know Zora and I have our culture days. We try to do this once a month or so, and that might be something we might want to look into.
That's a lot of fun, yeah. My husband and I went to many of them. I think we enjoyed going to the Soviet Union, the Russian embassy, Mount Alto. Yeah, I can't even think of the word, because he used to play up there when he was a little boy. So to actually get into it and have the tour was wonderful. But that was pre-9/11 and when a lot of more security went into place.
Well, if anyone's listening on Monday morning between 10 o'clock and 10:57 this morning, we would welcome you to call us and ask any questions you have of Zora or Brian. And the phone number here at the studio is 202-465-3080 if you'd like to call in and join our discussion. If you have any follow-up questions or if you're listening to a rebroadcast or a podcast, you're welcome to email us at foryourbenefit@nitpinc.com. That's nitpinc.com. It's for your benefit at nitpinc.com. So we would welcome you to ask us any questions, and I'll forward your questions to our guests as well. And Brian, what is the website to go to learn more about
it's
Rhodes Scholar?
It's www.rhodesscholar, RhodesScholar.org. And if I might mention, the .org is because we are a not-for-profit educational organization, so that we have to cover our costs, we're education-focused, really.
Mm-hmm. So you get a value when you travel with the Rhodes Scholar program. That's one of the things you try to include whenever someone signs up for a trip.
Very little is inexpensive anymore, but we strive very hard for good value in our program.
To keep the value. Although it's a quality program and you get an adventure that you wouldn't be able to set up on your own, it sounds like.
Yes. No.
Now, you also have a program called Outdoor Adventures. So who would that be geared to?
We do hiking programs. We do walking programs. We do biking programs. All of these around the United States and overseas. So, and some of them are quite strenuous. But in our catalog and on our website, every program has a numerical activity level. And you can tell how strenuous it's going to be. It's very common for people to train before taking one of the biking programs in Europe and make sure that you know they're up to it and they can do it. But we get phenomenal people who are very active and love to exercise.
Do you still have the one on Adventures Afloat where you get over to England and then you take the one of the queens back to America or vice versa?
I'm glad. It's a good question. We have a lot of those now because they've been so popular. And we have an office in England, in Canterbury, and our office in England organizes themed programs that start in New York, usually with one night in New York, and then board the Queen Mary 2. And for the entire crossing, there are presentations on the theme. So the theme might be spies, or the theme might be food and culture, or one of the popular themes for a program in England is theater. And we take our own lecturers on the ship. You disembark in Southampton, and then you have visits in England, or in the case of the theater program, more presentations, and go to the theater in London, and then have discussions and meet some of the actors or some of the backstage people. They're a terrific program.
Now, if you did that and you wanted to stay another week or 2 weeks in the British Isles, can you use that same thing to fly back home?
You bet. You can extend.
You can
start early or stay late, or there might be another land program in the British Isles that might be appealing.
Right. That you can hook on to.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that. That's excellent.
That's good.
I have a relative living in Wales that's been asking for
visit. We have a good program in Wales,
I'm
too,
sure.
So you wouldn't overstay your welcome.
Maybe they could join you, and then you could just spend some time on
your own. That sounds wonderful.
That would be fun. I've noticed, Zora, some of the trips that you've taken, some of them are university-based. It seems like you've visited college towns, like down in Norfolk and Old Dominion University, and then others are more of city-based, like a San Antonio and Las Vegas. Did you notice the difference between the two, or did you enjoy them both equally?
The university ones were back in the days when we stayed at college dorms, and there was no problem there at all. I mean, you had so much fun with the program itself that didn't matter.
It brought your days from Pitt back, right? When you were a university student at University of Pittsburgh, it brought some memories back.
Yes, absolutely. Well, there's one trip that I really wanted to mention to people that I can't recommend it highly enough, and it's one in New York City, five boroughs in 5 days.
You've done that more than once, haven't you?
Yes, I've done that once, and I swear I would like to do it again. Yeah. It's a grand trip because there's a question that goes along with this. Which of the five boroughs in New York is on the mainland?
Would be the Bronx.
Uh-huh. You're one of the few people that know that. I live in a retirement senior home now, and I have a group of friends who come from Brooklyn, all women, and I asked them this question. They said, well, Brooklyn, of course. And I said, no. I said, you're part of Long Island. We are not part of Long Island. But one of the things that you do get to do is to walk the Brooklyn Bridge, which is wonderful. You have a tour of Manhattan. You go to the all the way up to the top of the Bronx, so you do go back to the mainland. You ride to Staten Island Ferry over to Staten Island. And the part I liked next best to the Brooklyn Bridge was in Queens at the Art Museum in Queens, where they have the panorama of the city of New York, which was New York's contribution to the last World's Fair that was held there. It is inside a building, they have every single building in all five boroughs built to a scale that the Empire State Building is 15 inches tall. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine that? I mean, it's huge, and you just walk all around up and down ramps and look down. I used to watch Law and Order. I never knew where Rikers Island was. I went, yay, there's Rikers Island. But it takes your breath away.
Wow.
It's a wonderful thing.
So that's a good example, because you've seen and visited aspects of New York that even people who've been there 50 times have not.
They don't know about it. You can just take the subway out, and you get off there, and you walk down. It's right by Arthur Ashe, tennis stadium, and walk down there, and you are there where the World's Fair was. It's
one of my favorite things about visiting New York is eating there, because they just have think the restaurants, no matter what, the smallest little cafe right. to the nice restaurants are so good. So do they also take
yes.
you to nicer
yes.
restaurants?
Yes, when we took the subway over to Brooklyn and walked around there and saw things, then we went to Teresa's Polish restaurant. And I tell you that the kielbasa and all that was absolutely delicious. And then we walked the Brooklyn Bridge back to the city, which I think is the best way to walk and just to see it. It's just a wonderful experience. I'd do it again.
That would be a good trip.
Yes.
And that's only one of probably 10 to 15 different itineraries that are offered in New York.
Oh, yes.
I'll bet you there's probably some type of a stage or a Broadway trip that you offer
as
well.
A lot about the theater, too. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
That's right.
That's my second favorite thing about going to New York is going to the shows.
Yes. Well if anyone likes to gamble, they have some excellent trips to Las Vegas as well. The one I was on took us out to Boulder Dam as well, which was wonderful. I never thought I would ever...
Well, interesting about your Vegas trip. Didn't they take you behind the scenes to show you how they monitor the casinos?
Yes, yes. You got to see how they monitored it. And we also had a crash course on gambling for those of us, innocents, that don't gamble.
Actually, people are surprised that we offer a trip to Las Vegas and that it's educationally focused, but of course it is.
Oh, it is. Well, the one that was similar to the one I had now, their content is about showbiz, cuisine, and then a gambling crash course. And you are in a hotel right there on the strip, and you just go up and down. My girlfriend and I tried to see how many casinos we could get into in our 5 nights. We got into 14, and we spent probably a total of $2 in each one playing the slots. But it was just great fun just to see the hotels themselves.
It's
just eye-opening.
And they continue to build them out there. They're just not quitting.
Yes, it's wonderful.
So much for the recession.
Well, you really have a chance to do the things that you wouldn't dream of doing back home. But there it is. You're in this city. Go ahead, take advantage of it. Walk the streets and see what you see. I didn't mean to say walk the streets, but I mean perambulate and visit.
What about if you wanted to learn something new? Like, do you have trips where you might go and learn how to golf or learn how to cook or things like that? Do they offer any of those types?
Tammy, thank you. So, I mean, we have very successful and very popular golf programs, and in many locations throughout the United States. Some of them in Alabama are operated by Auburn University. And we have a lot of cuisine programs, some of them focused on food, some on natural foods, and some on cooking. So, or we have cooking classes as part of some of them, and we have them not only in the U.S., but overseas.
Mm-hmm. Would they be more geared to just the novice, or would they be for someone who really has a love of cooking already and is skilled in that area?
I think they're suitable for both, but they're really designed for people who are interested in food already and cook at home. But even if you don't, and the programs are really, they're suitable.
I think that would be a fun trip to do, too, to learn a new skill or to see how they make certain types of foods. I bet you they do wine tours, too, of...
We do have wine tours. You're right. Yeah. I don't know if we have them in the U.S. Of course, since there are thousands of programs, I don't know all of them myself.
Right.
But we do have wine programs in Europe.
In Europe. But that would be another interesting one to see, just to see that countryside. Because the cities in Europe are one thing, but I think once you get outside of the city, you can really experience a whole different culture.
I might mention that among the very popular programs in Europe are the riverboat-based programs.
Yes.
So on the Rhine and the Main and the Mosel and the Rhone. And many of these include food and wine in addition to sites along the river. And it's a very quiet, peaceful way to experience Europe.
Are the accommodations on the riverboats?
Typically, there'd be one or two nights in a hotel at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Say you start in Budapest, and then one or two nights in a hotel at the end, and then maybe 7 to 10 nights on the river in what are essentially small but functional cabins with your own private bath.
Would it be similar to a cabin on a cruise ship if someone has been on a cruise, or are they smaller than those?
Well, I think there's a distinction between the cruise ship that we imagine by watching television and cabins on most ships.
Right.
So on most ships, especially on the river ships where cabins have to be small, they're small, but comfortable, sometimes one queen or king size bed, sometimes two single beds, mm-hmm. And an attached bath.
And they have the meals prepared right on the boats? Or do you?
Yes. And most of the ships have really, really good food. And they strive both to please international travelers who come from a variety of countries, but also to have local food.
How large are the tours? Do you normally go with a group of 50 people, or is it smaller groups? Or
Anywhere from 10 to 30 to 40 on programs in the United States. Occasionally larger, but generally between 15 group. And 40.
So a lot of your traveling with a larger group would be by bus when you're moving around from place to place?
We would always have our own coach. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if for example, we're on a riverboat and mm-hmm. the boat holds 200 people and we have 35 people, then we include all of the off-boat excursions, mm-hmm. and we'll have our own boat come and meet us, and we'll go with our lecturer off to see the sights off the boat.
Now, if we look on the website, will the prices for the trips be listed there so we can check out what we can afford to do and how they are structured?
The website price-wise. is really pretty good. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of information, and you can see if you go and you write Germany. Mm-hmm. And then you'll get a list of programs in Germany. And then for each program, you can see the day-by-day itinerary and the cost per person double occupancy and the cost per person single occupancy.
So there's no surprises. You know what you're getting into.
That's right.
Do you have any plans to go anywhere coming up, Zora? You have some
not
dreams,
right now.
I know.
I'm still dreams. Getting settled and all. I'm going on a trip to Alaska in June, but then I have other plans in the future.
Now,
Can't wait. You
went to Mount St. Helens in Washington?
Yes. Well, that trip is no longer offered. It was called the Loop of Fire and Ice, and it was about the coming back of Mount St. Helens, yeah. How they were so amazed that the vegetation came back, the trees and all that.
That was after the eruption?
After the eruption, mm-hmm. yeah. And at the same time, we visited Mount Rainier and Mount Adams and went through lava tubes and things like that. It was spectacular. And driving up some of those roads, you talk about the Elder Hostel bus. I could not sit next to the window. I was definitely hanging over the inside aisle. But it was just a marvelous experience.
So it's interesting about Mount St. Helens, and it's no longer offered because some of the programs are related to specific events or
yes.
of one sort or another. One of our most popular programs in Washington now is based on the Dan Brown book, The Lost Symbol, which takes place in Washington.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And because the book is very popular, we designed a program that includes presentations by Masons and a Masonic guide and Masonic-focused programs within the Library of Congress and the National Cathedral, which are sites in the book.
In the back of the $1 bill.
yes. And it's very, very popular now, but I know that, and the book is out in paperback, and then there will be a movie, and then
it will be done.
Then it'll be done.
It'll be over, and then the next new thing will come. So you stay current, and you're constantly changing the programs so they don't get stagnant or stale.
We're always looking.
That must be a lot of work putting together the program. I know I like to plan trips for family and friends. We go on a ski trip, and there's an incredible amount of work that goes into figuring out where you're going to stay and how you're going to eat and all of that. So,
and that's what we do for you.
Yeah, that takes a lot of the problems out of trying to figure out what to do. What were some of your other favorite trips? Because I see this whole list here, and boy, it's just a whole variety of different things. Miami Beach.
Miami
That's where
Beach.
Your brother lived.
Yes. The thing in Miami was very interesting because we learned about the history of the beach, what people lived there and how it was developed and so forth. We also got a history of the whole area. We had a boat ride outside and went down. And now what they have one is on South Florida, Miami Beach and Key Largo. So it was very, very interesting to be able to walk, through the areas. And I can't remember the name of the very famous hotel, the biggest one there that had like a blue and white theme. Our hotel was next to that.
The Art Deco look.
We got to walk through there and see it. And it was just, I'd been to Miami many times. My brother lived there. Mm-hmm. But this was seeing it from the inside.
Yeah. Some of our most popular programs are in Florida. And, of course, people come from the Northeast and the Midwest. But sometimes they will string a couple of programs together. Or people go to Florida and stay for 2 or 3 months, and they'll include a couple of programs while they're in Florida.
It's a smart idea.
And that's a good way to get to see the state that a lot of people want to move to when they retire.
Right, and there's one, isn't there one on baseball in the spring, too?
There are several spring training programs.
That's right. That would be neat to observe.
That would be fun for a real baseball fan.
Absolutely, yeah, to watch the new kids coming along.
We have a lot of baseball fans in the programs.
Another one I thought was interesting was you called it Illness and Drama at West Virginia University in Morgantown.
Yes.
What was that about?
Well, it was about plays and this was a long time ago, so I can't remember all of it, but they lectured on the idea of, you know, how drama and stuff could center on people's either mental illness or physical illness and so forth. The more fun was the shenanigans from Shakespeare, and then of course Geology of the National Parks. We had to get a little bit of seriousness into it. Another nice thing about being at West Virginia University, I do not mean to disparage it, but it is a cow college. It's one of the agricultural colleges that all the states had, and they have absolutely the best ice cream in the whole wide world.
We
happened to be there when the football players were coming back, you know, for training, and we old folks had to sort of brush them aside so we could get our ice cream first. So that was
a nice thing to
visit.
And we still have a lot of programs that may not stay in dormitories, but that are arranged by universities and colleges around the country. We, Rhodes Scholar, has a very decentralized system, and we work with local providers in all 50 states, many of them going back to the origins when we were at colleges in New Hampshire, are colleges and universities still.
It's amazing to see all the different varieties of things you can do and how that's all kept in one location where you can choose from this.
Yes,
and the length of
the programs varies too, from 3 to 5 days or more, so that you can try, you know, dip your toe in the water for one of the short ones just to see how you like it, and then venture forth after that.
You know, some of our travelers take only international programs, and some take only programs in North America, Canada, U.S., Mexico, and many take both. So you can start with a short program in West Virginia, and see if you like it.
And the age range goes up to, I guess, unlimited, right?
Oh, you bet. When I started working with Elder Hostel, when I would see, 92, I'd think, boy, I don't know, it's pretty old. I don't know if he's going to be able to make it. But now I know that if it says 95.
If they sign up, they're willing to go, they're going to go. So it's unlimited. That's something you can do and look forward to at any age, whether you're 50 or 95.
Absolutely.
It's amazing.
The other thing is, if you wanted to go to a part of the country you don't know, say the Northwest, you can just tie up maybe 2 or 3 programs. If you're going to fly that far, you may as well, and you know, get as much out of your trip as you can.
So kind of piggyback one onto the next.
Yes, and it's just a wonderful way to do it.
And it sounds like it can, even though you're going to spend the money on all the adventures, it's still...
Yes.
Contained within the price, everything's included, so you don't have to worry about coming up with extra cash while you're there, other than just bringing back maybe a few souvenirs if you want.
Yeah.
You know, I should mention, related to age, is that before one takes any Rhodes Scholar program, one fills out a health and safety form, which has some of your medical history, what your allergies are, who is your emergency contact, who your doctor is, what his phone number is, etc. So that our group leader has all of this information in case there is an accident.
And you make accommodations for people who need extra help with traveling?
If at all possible, of course we do. And occasionally we get people who have limited mobility or have helping dogs. Mm-hmm. And we'll explore to see what's possible, and if it's at all possible, we do.
So your trips that can accommodate someone perhaps in a wheelchair or with a walker will be noted on the trip itself?
One would look at the activity level, and then let's say if you're in a wheelchair, look at the activity level, and then give a call to our registration customer service line, and they will contact whoever is in charge of that trip and make sure that it will work out.
You know, with the program been around as long as it has, I'm sure you've experienced every type of emergency possible, so you know how to handle it, and your tour guides are trained on what to do.
We have, and every Rhodes Scholar participant for every program in the United States or overseas has emergency evacuation insurance as part of the coverage. And this is particularly relevant overseas. And in fact, with that coverage and an 800 number in Houston that people can call from anywhere in the world, we've had people emergency evacuated in air ambulances from overseas back home.
And it's covered by the
insurance.
And
it's covered, yes.
So you don't even have to worry about that.
That's right.
Wow. Were you going to tell us about something else? Or I can see you're chomping at the bit to tell us another another adventure story.
No, I'm just getting anxious to check out the catalog again and see where my itchy feet want to go next. It's
You had one to the Kentucky Derby? Was it during the Derby?
I went to one. It was done. It was the Run for the Roses, a history of the Kentucky Derby. It was Kentucky music, and we visited the Horse Museum down there, which was wonderful. And now there's an intergenerational program on these same topics, which would be a great thing to take small children for.
Yeah.
But that the Horse Museum down near Louisville was something, because they had just about every breed of horse that you could think of. And then they would have two or three presentations a day, and about five riders would come out on five different horses dressed appropriately. If it was like a horse that a knight would have worn back mm-hmm. in the days of ridden in the days of King Arthur, the guy would come out, you know, with armor and all that. It's just the variety of things that you can see and learn about is just beyond Ken.
Sometimes at the end of a program here in Washington, people will say, "I had no idea."
That's what it sounds like. When I was picturing what this was, I wasn't thinking of all the things you could do with this group that you couldn't do if you were just planning a trip on your own. So to me, that would be the real draw.
The logistics would be impossible. But the folks who plan the trips are experienced. They know how to get you in and out mm-hmm. For the best value for your time and money. And it's one of the goodies, especially with gas now at almost $4 a gallon.
That's what I was thinking, too. It's like,
one of our most popular programs here in Washington is called Spies, Lies, and Intelligence. And we do it 8 times a year. And in fact, some local people come and take it. And they don't stay at the hotel, but we also have something we call a commuter rate, which includes for this program all services except the hotel.
Except the hotel.
And among the visits, well, we take a spy tour of the city of Washington, but we also go to the National Cryptologic Museum at Fort Meade, and people will say, "I've lived here all my life. I didn't even know it was there. I've never been."
Probably couldn't go there without a guide.
You can, mm-hmm. but not in the same way, actually, because we're taken around and shown things, and things are explained to us. But people don't know that, in fact, a civilian can go on to Fort Meade and mm-hmm. go to the Cryptologic Museum, but people don't. It's a little hard to get
Never
to
think,
if you live down there.
It's right on the same property practically as the National Security Agency.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We used to go out. Walter loved to go out there to, in fact, we donated his spy books to that library at the Cryptological Museum.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And Brian, tell us again the phone number to call if somebody wanted to call, or the website again.
The website is www.roadscholar.org. And one can take a look at that website. Can also use the website to request a catalog if you prefer a catalog to the website. If you want to call me in Washington, my number is 202-393-2370, and if I can't answer your question, I'll find out where to send you.
Find somebody who can. How large is the program in Washington? Do we have
So we have 3 different provider offices in Washington.
Wow.
I work directly for Rhodes Scholar, mm-hmm. And so I'm a direct provider office. We also have programs that are organized by the American Civic Center, which is based in Alexandria, and they do programs related to history, civics, the legislative process, the monuments, which you'll find in the catalog as mm-hmm. well. And we have programs organized by the American Foreign Service Association, which is the union for active and retired foreign service officers. And these programs all relate to foreign policy. There are more lectures in these programs. So there might be something on the Middle East or Southeast Asia or European Union diplomacy. And these are all under Washington, D.C.
And those are all available through the catalog, all 3 of those different areas.
Yes, that's right.
Whether you're looking for history or civics or just some inside information about how D.C. got to be the way it is.
Right.
We've got so many different things. Yeah, that's what I always like to travel around D.C. with Zora because, you know, I've lived here 31 years, but she's taken me to places I've never been before. So she truly enjoys that adventure.
We have a program going on this week, and one of our, called Independent City Discovery. It's an unusual kind of program, but it's sort of experience Washington like a Washingtonian, with some of the off-the-beaten-track sites, and we go to President Lincoln's cottage. Now, if you go at the proper time of day,
President Lincoln had a cottage.
anyone can go, but people don't because it's not in downtown Washington, and it's not as well-known, and it's an extraordinary place to visit. You learn a great deal.
I can see you've been there.
Yes, I've been there. You've been there. A couple times.
I was noticing, too, that you studied New Orleans, but you weren't in New Orleans to do it. You were at Elkins, West Virginia, at Davis and Elkins College.
Yeah, well, yes, we did. That was in the days, but I'm sorry, what was your question again?
You were talking about, I was seeing one of the trips that you took was Augusta Heritage Center and New Orleans cuisine and music and dancing, but it was actually not in New Orleans.
No, it was up in Elkins, West Virginia, mm-hmm. but that's we don't have it there anymore.
Right.
But it was at the little college there, and we stayed in the dorm, but we learned all this stuff. We learned how to do Cajun dancing, how to cook a little bit, listen to the music, and that was there. But what they have now, in sort of like in place of that, that's offered by another outfit there, is you get to visit the famous Greenbrier Hotel,
wow.
Which is something to behold. Inside there is a bunker that was built in the Eisenhower administration time, so in case anyone bombed Washington, there was a place for Congress to actually live there in a bunker underground, and that's yeah. something to see.
You visited
and on that,
there.
And, wow. Yes, I've seen. I saw that when I went with a group from one of the other retirement places. Mm-hmm. You get to ride the Cass short gauge railroad up the mountain, something like that. Those are neat things to do.
So I can't imagine somebody wanting a second career in retirement. This sounds like a more fun way to spend your retirement
yeah,
time.
And, I mean, you're learning, but you're not. I mean, it's not an effort. It's
right.
just a pleasure because you just absorb the country, the scenery, the way people talk. There are different accents and different words that are used. Like when I was down in San Antonio, it was nothing quite like sitting there by the Riverwalk and having a waiter make your guacamole right there and just enjoy
the trip and not have to worry about the arrangements and all the logistics
Correct.
Of how to get there.
You just
and how
have
to
remember
out.
Where the hotel was so you could get back.
So, and what about the trips overseas with the language barrier? I guess your tour guides can speak the language of where they're going?
All the programs overseas are conducted in English. And it's very unusual to have any problems related to language.
Right. So you don't have to worry about speaking French if you're going to France or...
You don't. Or Vietnamese or mm-hmm. Swahili.
Right. I guess there's trips not only in Europe, but maybe in Africa and South America and different...
90 countries.
90
So that if you're interested in Brazil or Cambodia or Japan, we have programs in all of those places. I make a little pitch for our programs in China, which I think are the best you can find in
wow.
terms of highly educational, very well organized, and very good value. It's good prices and good hotels.
Well, any final thoughts? Because we are running out of time. The time went so fast.
Sign up. Get sign your catalog. Up. Sign up for a couple places to visit that you never dreamed that you could, and go and enjoy. Believe me, you will.
I'd say take a look at the website or request a catalog and have a look. And if you've got any questions, we have the 877 number with people to answer.
Great. Well, thank you both for being here. We're out of time, but see you next week with a lawyer and a tax guy. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.
The administration has established a